Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to a very rare Tuesday night live stream on Evangelical Dark Web. This will be the replacement of the Wednesday morning video, which I've been usually doing, but there's a lot to recap. Definitely the biggest story in Christian news over the weekend was the Crisis King Conference by Right Response Ministries. How to Defeat Trash World was part of the theme of the conference. So I believe this was a big deal, big conference. I think a lot of stuff happened at this conference, and I think it will have a lasting impact on the Christian right, which is a pretty broad umbrella term for people who are Christian nationalists or Christian nationalists adjacent enough, you know, people who just want to win. I think is a way to put it, that are also Christians. So I think there's a lot to talk about. I want you on here because you'll probably have some good questions about, you know, what was the conference like? What was the on the ground view? And I definitely want to know what the internet was saying about the conference, because the service inside the center, the convention center, was pretty bad. So I was not like on my phone a whole lot during those days. But nonetheless, my post still did the numbers. Anyway, before I get into it, what are your kind of ethereal thoughts? Because I think that this will be a lasting conference. I think that there's some stuff that happened at this conference that I think will shape the church, or at least a lot of the people in the church, moving forward. What are your kind of thoughts or perceptions about what went on?
Well, I mean, for starters, we could just talk about the size of the conference being upwards of 1,000 was the number I was seeing reported online. And again, I'll just say, off the bat, I wasn't necessarily as online on Saturday and Sundays, just because of all the stuff I had going on. I was on a death march on Saturday and more or less still recovering on Sunday. So I wasn't quite on social media, but one thing I did see pointed out was that it was a large turnout as far as the crowd size go, and probably larger than what I was anticipating if I just had to like ballpark how big this conference was off the top of my head. I probably would have said close to the 500 max.
Really?
So it was 1,000 people.
Give or take,
Yeah.
Now, in a lot of the pictures, you'll see open seats, but I do think they put a lot of chairs out and people just kind of naturally spread out. And yeah, some people came early, left early, or came late. Other people left early. Like Sunday was less crowded than, you know, Friday and Saturday were. So just, or is it, sorry, Thursday, Friday and Saturday. So there's a lot to keep in mind with these types of things. I can tell you what speakers were there and when they were there and how long they stayed and stuff like that. Yeah, and already I'm seeing some people from the conference in the chat. So, good evening to you all. So, with that said,
I want to talk about the people, the crowd.
Let's talk about the crowd first. So, actually, I'll let you finish. Then we'll talk about the crowd.
I'll add on to it by saying, like, again, when you get into a conference like that, that's where you actually, like, you know, dare I say, touch grass and actually meet the anons that are on the internet that get bashed. So resoundingly by like the likes of James White, Jordan Peterson. I mean, even like if you go to like the Steve Dace crew with Totters and being a non-basher, but people that bash anons have never touched grass. They've never actually met their audience. And if they did, they would realize that they had a lot of anons in their audience. Yeah. And if you go to a conference like that, you're going to see anons.
Bring up the Steve Dace and the bashing of the anons that's gone on their show. You know, Todd definitely has done that. But they, when I was on their show, or before in the booking process for their show, they wanted to verify that I would use my actual name, or that I would be willing to be public about who I actually was, almost as if they're trying to dox me, even though I am not an anonymous person. You can't cancel me. So all this stuff is true, but nonetheless, that's kind of the impression that was gathered from the Steve Dace show. So with that said, let's dive into the crowd. Who was in the crowd? Actually, you brought up about 1,000 people first. That's the number that I reported and a lot of other people were using while at the conference. So that's why that number is stuck. I'm not going to say I'm the greatest at estimating crowd size, but yeah, it was a good crowd size, a lot of different people. And let's talk about, I would say it's probably 70% men and 30% women. And I think that's a pretty fair way to give the ratio. It's probably 70-30. There are some children there. I'm surprised that people are bringing their children to this, but you know what? More power to them, more power to them. I did not bring my children to this. I flew in from out of town, and I can tell you some stories about that. Not the flight, but, you know, my overall travel experiences. But we'll save that for later. So I also want to say, like, the crowd was pretty skinny. There's maybe like two people that I thought were really fat.
So, okay. So that also
was a pretty skinny, it was a pretty skinny crowd. Like it was, you know, a lot of the people were, some of the people were like muscle bros, but other people are like,
so it wasn't like a Southern Baptist convention.
Pretty skinny. Like I'm a pretty skinny guy myself. And then, along those lines,
well, again, let's add
height,
to that.
The average height was probably taller as well, so, but the BMI was below average.
When you're in those kinds of crowds, and again, they weren't fatherless, angry young men that were enraged at the world like Doug Wilson like slandered these people to be, were they?
No. A lot of these people. I'll get into like what my read of the people is and, you know, the whole fatherlessness that they've been accused of. But I do want to give a compliment to Steve Dace. He is skinnier in person.
I mean, yeah,
I thought he might be the fattest person. No, he was skinny. He was skinnier in person.
Yeah. I mean, he's like what he's been doing has been working.
Yeah. So
same thing with Whitlock. So
what is Ozempic? Does he do Ozempic?
I don't think so. Anyway. He built a gym, so.
So who exactly are these people that showed up to the conference? Number one thing I would say is they're business owners. I think that's the number one. If you had to do like a plurality of careers or whatever, business owner would probably be the number one answer. And that's for a couple reasons. First, it is, you know, conferences going to them, pretty expensive. Like, It costs money to go to these conferences, and business owners have more money to spend at these conferences. And then if they're not like business owners, a lot of them are more or less local. A little bit difficult to say that someone's local in Texas because it's such a vast state. You're like, oh, they're from Texas. Oh, Corpus Christi or El Paso. Yeah, or Amarillo. Or is it Amarillo? I don't know. One thing that I know is Texas is one of those states that you have to live there to know how to pronounce all the town names. So there's a lot of that. I didn't realize since going to Texas that they renamed Fort Hood because, you know, you can't name forts after Southern generals anymore.
Yeah, but, thank you, Congress.
Yeah, the woke Congress did that. So I would say that's a huge commonality. And the sponsors at the conference were mostly geared towards rich people. I got to talk to a lot of the sponsors there. There weren't that many sponsors because Joel Webbin wanted to make the sponsorship relatively exclusive.
Yeah, he didn't want 50 different labels.
He didn't want 50 different labels. It seems like there was a cutoff on how many sponsors that he wanted because he gave each of the sponsors speaking time. But a lot of the sponsors were for investing, financial planning, and stuff like that. One of the sponsors, First Liberty, something in loans, they were about fueling political candidates. And the guy who helped found it was a Buchanan campaign staffer. So he was a big Buchanan fan, and he wants to fund more candidates like Buchanan. It seems like he was a big funder of Dusty Devers in Oklahoma, among other people. So a lot of these people in the room were movers and shakers. David Reese, who's a private equity guy, pretty nice guy in person. Again, one thing about him is he's probably like the least ecumenical person ever, which, again, I'm a lot more ecumenical than David Reese is, but that's not saying a whole lot. But he's a nice guy to hang out with. He bought, there was an after party one night, and he bought us IHOP. So, you know, good guy. And a lot of theology discussions in public that anyone who's in the restaurant could listen in on, because people were talking pretty loud for being at one table. Anyway. Oh, yeah. Here's another thing. Jeremy points out there's one little kid just selling like a car salesman, but more trustworthy. Yeah, like the children were selling. They were hustling at this event for their sponsors. A lot of, 1689 and Squirrely Joe's were both sponsors at this event. David Reese was a sponsor. A few financial companies were sponsors. New Christendom Press was a sponsor. So a lot of things, a lot of these sponsorships were geared towards rich people, but you had the cigar, the coffee, and the books that were geared towards everybody that everyone could get in on. So, and then TrueScript was a sponsor at the event. So, oh, and then Curios Consulting, who does advertising on A.D. Robles' podcast, was a sponsor. I talked to them because I feel like there's some business that I could do with them. I wasn't actually, not on their end, but me being a vendor of theirs, if they ever need what I do in my day job. So I got to do a little of multiple businesses on this trip. But overall, the people there, small business owners, this was probably for the movers and shakers of the Christian nationalist movement. It was, and a lot of people couldn't make it, obviously. So those are my thoughts on the people that were there. I'm not going to say everyone there was a giga chad in terms of physical prowess. There weren't really people that were screaming diabetes. And there weren't really...
What about pastors? How many would you say were ordained?
That's a good question. I'm going to say it was mostly laymen, but I did meet quite a few pastors as well. There's a pastor in South Carolina that I met. Pretty good guy, fan of the channel. I can't say I met that many pastors, but there were a few pastors that were there that I met, but again, I can't say I met them. I don't think pastors were the majority of this conference. This was a conference that had a different vibe. It was not about missionaries and church planting or pastors learning how to preach better. It wasn't like that. It instead was a lot of laymen getting together to think about politics and such. So, yeah, that was a good question for sure. Because I would not have brought that up without you bringing that up. So awesome. So I guess we can start off with the actual conference itself. So Thursday night, this conference started on a Thursday. I flew in on a Wednesday because I can't get up in the morning all that well. I struggle getting up in the morning sometimes. I'm a night owl, not a morning person. And so I flew in on Wednesday. Came in on Wednesday evening, settled in my hotel. And let me tell you, it was not a classy establishment. I walk into the hotel room, the TV is on, a light bulb is out, so the room is relatively dark. And I try to turn the TV off, and then the remote's not working. I check the remote, and the batteries were taken out of it. So this is a very shady hotel experience that I had.
Because Joel Levin, anything crawling on the bed?
We'll get to what's crawling around. Don't worry. But so Joel Levin, again, was doing group discounts on hotels, but those were much more expensive hotels than what I was going to shell out for. We're talking $100 to $200 a night. I can't do that. I can't swing that. But as you can see, when you choose not to swing that, there are some consequences. The shower handle came off. Like, how does that happen? And I counted 4 or 5 cockroaches.
Yeah.
And they were pretty hard to identify because I'm used to like the big cockroaches. Like that's what I'm used to as far as my roach goes, like big cockroach, Wally, you know, stuff like that. Cartoon cockroaches. But these were like little ones. They had the legs of a grasshopper, the body of a beetle, and the pinchers of an earwig. And I'm like, what is that? It threw me off because I thought cockroaches were bigger. And these were much smaller, but my wife's like sends me a chart of like different breeds of cockroach. I'm like, yep, that's a cockroach then. And you know, I'm just flushing them and stuff. So yeah, 4 or 5 cockroaches of very from tiny to medium. So yeah. No. The reason why it's 4 or 5 is because one of them might have been a repeat because I didn't kill one of them. And, you know, it was just too out of the way for me to want to kill. So I could have seen it again. That's why it's 4 or 5. So 3 of them got flushed and at least. And I don't know what happened to the other 2. I might have been checking out. So, yeah. So that's what I stayed with. Back to the conference. Day 1, we got Andrew Torba. And he's the only speaker
Torba
on day 1.
Or Isker?
Sorry, Andrew Isker. Andrew Isker. He's the only speaker on day 1. And he does an excellent roast at the end of his speech, just saying what he disagrees with each speaker about. And it's pretty funny. He's like, I'm going to let Joel and John Harris be wrong about baptism. And, you know, Steve Dace is, I think he brings up eschatology, but he's like, you know, he goes in about football, you know, and the fact that he's a Lions fan. He talks about A.D. Robles is wrong for liking baseball more than football and stuff like that. So it's a pretty funny roast that he does about how he disagrees with each of the speakers there. He talks about Calvin Robinson, who will talk more about his speech in a while, you know, being wrong about the Reformation and then gets a little bit nerdy about it and posits an alternative history in which if the English had backed the Calvinist in France, the French Revolution wouldn't have happened. So it's pretty funny, I thought. So Andrew Torba did a good opener because he's the inspiration for the Defeating Trash World theme in many ways, because he wrote the book on Trash World with the Boniface option, which I, again, as far as normie Christian books go, not that the book is written for normies or by normies, but at a reading level, your average Christian could read that book and not have any problems. Your average Christian cannot read, does not have the reading capacity for The Case for Christian Nationalism.
Yeah, I mean,
many Christians did rise to that occasion. But the Boniface option is something that a normie Christian could read. And as far as those types of books goes, that is one of the best. He kicked it off. Then there was an after party where they brought out a cash bar. And here's the thing. I talked to almost all the speakers. And maybe, you know, I talked to John Harris on Thursday. He left early, actually. He wasn't there.
He pulled an A.D. Robles.
I don't think he was there on the final day. A.D. Robles does disappear a lot. But I actually talked to A.D. quite a bit. You know, we talked Sopranos. He liked the ending of Sopranos, by the way.
My kind of guy.
The correct opinion. You know, talked a lot about the veto plot and just quoting like who are the favorite lines from each character in the show and stuff like that. But we had a lot of different conversations. But going back, so there's an after party. And then after the after party, there's another after party. And that's when David Reese, treated people to IHOP and didn't get back to the hotel room till like 2 o'clock in the morning. So that's basically the Thursday night. opening announcements. Joel Webbin has a habit of turning announcements into sermons. But he only really did that once because he really tried to curtail himself from doing that. But he does have a tendency to turn prayers into sermons. So it's kind of funny. If you ever listen to him pray in public, he does tend to do that. By the way, Joel Webbin is way skinnier in person. Like, he's pretty skinny in person. Again, you don't expect that. Very much a bro, though. He is a bro. Very bromantic sense of humor. Fun to be around. Fun to be around. So Friday happens. Friday is an all-day event. And Calvin Robinson, I believe, was first up on Friday. And
just keep in mind, that was going into the conference. That was the biggest controversy as far as speakers go.
Yeah. Because Calvin Robinson, not very friendly to Calvinism, even though he's an Anglican, which makes no sense because Anglicanism is historically more or less Calvinistic. Maybe not as Calvinistic as Presbyterianism, but it still is Reformed generally. Also, Roman Catholicism is condemned in many ways by the 39 articles of Anglicanism in the Book of Common Prayer. So I don't see how you can reconcile the two, but Calvin Robinson's going to proceed and power through it anyway. But his speech was about Islam and how Islam is the official religion of Trash World in the UK. And he talked at great length about what Islam is doing in the UK, about how the country is just basically, this was the most depressing of the speeches. It was basically he's telling story after story about Christians being persecuted in the UK because the country's either being unwilling to acknowledge, or let's use the word notice, they're being unwilling to notice the Muslim problem, and then they're also punishing and going after Christians for prayer.
And that's a very timely speech to give, especially as the show Adolescence on Netflix sparked a national conversation overseas of them trying to paint a white child as the culprit when realistically the crime that he's on the show commits is committed by, let's say, a non-white. And, you know, it's for once the Netflix version is whitewashed and not the opposite.
Yeah, the one time that Netflix does, you know, whitewashes a character, and it's for a reason.
So, and again, Calvin making his speech on Islam being the, like, that's just perfect timing because you have case in point.
Yeah.
They don't want to acknowledge it. Instead, they want to like blame Andrew Tate.
They punish you if you do acknowledge it. And that's been a huge issue. And that's what Calvin talked about. That his speech was the most blackpilling. I will say that. Like, it's nothing against him, but it was the most blackpilling speech. And he talked about how there's only spiritual solutions to the UK's problems because there isn't a Christian critical mass.
Yeah, and I was in a conversation over the weekend and, you know, similar theme where the problem where you see a lot of these European right-wing guys are absolutely hating on America right now. They're very doomer. Academic Agent would be one example, but there are others. And the problem with their right-wing movements is that they're fundamentally atheist. And that's why they're not actually succeeding. If they actually want to have a right-wing that succeeds over in Europe, you have to return to God.
Yeah, you need to invoke the power of God because you're not up against secular forces. You're not up against, it's not atheist on atheist. It's, you know, you're asking Satan to divide his house, and that's just not going to work. And, you know, very depressing. A lot of the big talk at the conference was about how Muslims are trying to build a town in Texas. So the Epic City Project or whatever they're trying to call it. So that's a huge talk in the town, and that was brought up multiple times at the conference by multiple speakers. I will say this, there was no audience questions and answers at the conference. So, and I don't blame, and that's probably for the best. Let the experts choose the questions and ask them. No offense, my experience is mostly from political events. You want the experts ask screening questions or whatever to You don't always want open forum, open microphone, because the people are just gonna, a lot of times people will just give an argument and then ask a question like, do you agree with that? And yeah, it takes up a lot of time. But so there wasn't really audience participation at these events, but I think that was for the best. I think the panels had really good questions and discussions thrown. So with that said, each session also had a break in between them because they let people get up and stretch. And
stuff. Yeah, it's like a 40-minute speech. Yeah, 10-15-minute break makes sense.
Yeah. So let's get into the weeds about what else happened. So, yeah, day one had the – oh, sorry, this would be day two that we're on, is the Calvin Robinson speech. So Steve Dace spoke after that, and I believe there was a panel discussion before that, which talked about concerns and it talked about solutions. So I thought this panel had a lot of the heavy hitters on it, but I actually thought the following panel surpassed it. It's pretty interesting. Well, let's talk about Steve Dace. I know a lot of people asked me,
and I have it written down too. Everyone
who went to that conference and recognized me is like, I saw you on Steve Dace. And, you know, there's a lot of encouragement as a result of that. Like, Auron McIntyre, you know, gave me some encouragement. I won't just say what he said because I don't know how public that was, but he gave me some encouragement about that. One of the guys with the mustache that was on stage gave me some encouragement about that. I can't remember whether it was an Ogden bro or whether it was Joel Evans' right-hand man. So I'm not sure which one it was, but a lot of people gave me encouragement about that. It's like, they've only seen one episode of Steve Dace and it was the one I was on, but because that was a struggle session and I predicted that it would be, it just wasn't a struggle session the way I thought, because he wanted to bring up tweets that I've never interacted with by people that I may or may not even follow on social media. Oh, so Ben Garrett did. Okay. Thank you for the correction, because he was there in the chat. So anyway, that was kind of interesting. A lot of encouragement about that.
But did you actually have an interaction with Dace or no?
No. So let's get into Steve Dace. Steve Dace showed up on Friday, and that was it. He didn't stick around at all. He didn't talk to anyone in the crowd that I know of. He did the panel, did the speech, went straight off to Buc-ee's, I guess, because that was what he tweeted about. I'm out of here. You know, screw you guys, I'm going home. You know, like he kind of did that. But again, he is skinnier in person, I do got to say. So when he gave the speech, I was about 15 yards away. And I thought there was maybe one or two occasions, one during the panel and the other during a speech, where, you know, he might have seen me, because again, this room isn't dark. It isn't dark, so where you only see like maybe the first crowd. I think you can see way past.
Yeah, all the pictures seem to imply it was well lit.
Yeah, it was well lit enough to see way. Well, even still, you had the lights coming onto the stage in your face that kind of blinds you a little bit, but to where you can't see past the lights sometimes or that well. But I think he could have made me out if he was diligent in his eyesight. But he gives a pretty, it's a very eclectic speech. Actually, let's talk about what he said on the panel first, because what he said on the panel was actually pretty funny, because he talked about his comments on Carly Fiorina during the 2016 Cruz campaign, which, you know, got them into hot water, got him and Ted Cruz into hot water, because he said that she had a full vagina moment or something like that on social media, which he thought was pretty funny, because, you know, it was cool when it was used on Hillary Clinton. And he talked about how, even though it was funny, even though it was true, it was not prudent. And I thought that was pretty good. There was good takeaways during the panel when they discussed that. When he went to the speech, Let's just say this about his speech. If you've listened to a Steve Dace speech before, you've heard a lot of the same elements. So A lot of his speech is just riffing off of old stories, common stories, and stuff like that. And
shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
He does get paid to speak at a lot of events, particularly like pro-life events. So
if you ever heard him talk about, you know, homeschool graduations and Jeremiah 29:11, he did that again. He talked about his marriage struggles, which apparently when he interviewed Joel Webbin and gave him the softball treatment, even though me and Joel Webbin have the same views on the Jews and all that. Even though we have pretty similar views on that.
The Jews.
I know. He gives him the softball interview. And here, it's like that scene in Big Daddy where, you know, he's having the kids spell cat, dog, and whatever. And, you know, hip hop anonymous.
Yeah,
I did like that. You give him the easy one. No, which I'm not like, you know, butthurt about that. I'm making fun of myself here. But anyway, apparently he revealed more intimate details about his marital struggles on that show, and it's pretty interesting. He didn't do that there, but you should listen to that interview that he did with Joel Webbin. I have not listened to it yet, so I don't want to like give wrongly summarize it. But his speech was a lot of things. It was a hodgepodge of a lot of stories. He talked about gatekeeping in the beginning, where he talked about someone wanted to gatekeep him, but then, you know, that person then eventually came around to Steve Dason as one of his biggest backers. And then he wanted to say he was almost trying to be a moderating force. So Joel Webbin opened up the conference by saying, you know, there's the Overton window, then there's what the Bible says, and then says the Overton window is not close enough that we have to worry about overcorrection yet. Like, that time may come, but we're not even there yet. And then Steve Dace references the struggle session that he had with me during his speech.
How overt is the reference?
Not by name, but it's pretty obvious given the context.
So if you knew. Yeah.
And he basically struggle sessions the audience about going too far. He creates this false dilemma. It's a false dilemma, not a dichotomy, about us not loving our neighbors enough and stuff like that. But first of all, we got to remember what loving your neighbor is. It's love your neighbor as yourself. So that's a conditional love. It's on the condition of yourself, do unto others as you would have done unto you. And I got to say, I don't mind people right-wing edgelording onto me. I don't mind that. I want them to do unto me as I do unto them. So there's no violation of loving your neighbor as yourself when you right-wing edgelord, if that is how you want to be loved.
I mean, at the end of the day, we got to remember right-wing edgelords helped Trump win an election.
Indeed.
Again, they're eating the cats and the dogs was said on a debate stage because of right-wing edgelords.
Yeah. So Steve Dace gave that, and I think for that reason, I would say he had the weakest speech. Other than you can maybe argue that David Reese's theonomy sales pitch, you could argue that that might have been the weakest speech. We'll get to that in a second, but there was something I really liked about that speech that I'll get to. Were you able to watch any of it, or is that something that you had to pay for?
I do not have, I would not have had time, nor did I thought it would have been behind the paywall, because I think someone said it was a Patreon exclusive.
Okay. So yeah, Steve Dace is making, everyone was asking, you know, did, did you catch that reference about, you know, Steve Dace made about you? Or I thought about what Steve Dace talked about. And I tweeted out what I thought, which was, you know, Steve Dace referenced the struggle session during his, kind of creating the false dilemma about loving your neighbor. But other than that, good speech. It was a great speech because he did talk about, he did provide some wisdom, you know, after that. So that was in the middle of his speech. But after that, he closed really strong. He didn't give a bad speech. Let me just read what my notes are on that. It was compelling and highlighted his personal journey, both successes and failure. So I thought that was fine. But again, his opening point about not being gatekeepers, and then he goes on a diatribe about involving gatekeeping. And he's 15 yards from me. I'm very stoic in the crowd. Like, I didn't react. You wouldn't have seen a facial expression from me when he said that. But anyway, that's Steve Dace. If you've heard a Steve Dace speech, you would have heard a lot of the same beats, but it's good. It's good. He's a very good speaker. So a lot of people really appreciated him because the talent is there. I do want to say Nobody Special says, if you're not willing to go too far, you'll never go far enough. Chael Sonnen. I don't know who that is who made the quote, but yes, they're kind of correct. Good. And thank you for the super chat as well. So moving on, after him was Eric Khan, who basically,
because this was
counter-signaled, he counter-signaled Steve Dace, I think.
This was the speech that was talked about as of confronting the Longhouse, I think.
Yes.
That was the reputation it had on the internet.
So it's pretty funny because he talked about the history of the Longhouse, Eric Khan did. And it's one of the ongoing jokes at the conference was that Eric Khan was not nearly as controversial as Joel Webbin anymore. Like, Joel Webbin was so much more controversial. He was now the most hated person at the conference. And not Eric Khan, which I guess used to be the case, such as at last year's conference where Doug Wilson spoke and, you know, some other people spoke. So Eric Khan, not to be outdone, goes on a speech attacking the Longhouse, and he's not exactly Baptist. He didn't stick to a 3-point thing. He had like 11 ways to destroy and defeat the Longhouse. And yeah, this is a good mention by Jeremy Kearns. Yeah, he did an early life check on like one of the people from the from the Frankfurt School, particularly Hugh, played a role in feminism and stuff like that. So he early life checked him during his speech. But he talked about the history of the Longhouse. He talked about how C.S. Lewis was critical of the Longhouse in his writing of The Silver Chair with the headmaster of the school, who was eventually made a minister of parliament, and kind of a joke that C.S. Lewis wrote at the end of that book. And he discussed practical solutions for defeating the Longhouse, such as fostering a cultural indifference to gynocratic norms. And this is broadly summarized by the J.D. Vance quote, "I don't really care, Margaret," or is that the exact quote? I'm not word perfect, or, you know, but I strive to be. So the "I don't really care, Margaret" line was kind of an emphasis of that speech. He talked about not caring about gynocratic norms. He talked about vibing with the boys and stuff like that, forming male friendships, and just practical ways to defeat the Longhouse, which is a shorthand term for gynocratic rule. I like this statistics man. Eric Controversial, and yes, nice. I remember you. I remember you from the conference. Yes, I met the Anons. I met the subs.
And now keep in mind,
patron or two.
When it comes to defeating the Longhouse, I mean, you know, everyone I talk about this too. And again, I'm not the originator of this idea, but once it was told to me, I passed it on and kind of, you know, even written it in a couple of articles over the year. And it is that that confronting women is more controversial than talking about the Jews, even in conservative circles, where, you know, one group kind of has a lot of influence and dominance over the space. Talking about women is more controversial and more of a third rail than talking about the Jews.
Yeah, I mean, even I, like, and Eric Khan actually inadvertently did both. But I was like, man, he's going pretty hard. I'm like, shouldn't he say some more couch language to, you know, because there are women at this conference. You want to empower them as well in ways that feminism does not. You know, like actually encouraging people to embrace actual femininity, so to speak, is what I'm getting at. But he went hard against the Longhouse and against feminism, against gynocratic rule and how tyrannical it is and how it leads to decadence and evil. It's ultimately oppressive to men. And he says that men need to rise up and shake off the shackles of gynocratic norms. So it was a very rousing speech, and that was some hype there. He cranked it up to 11. And then the night concludes with Aaron McIntyre. So he spoke about elite theory. And this was, I wrote this at the time, this was the wonkiest of the speeches. He discussed the need for Christians to take their place in cultural elites. So he talked a lot about the lions and foxes. If you're familiar with Aaron McIntyre's content, you'd know what that is.
Yeah, he talks a lot about this in Total State. That's one of probably the prevailing concepts is the, I guess, I don't know if it's Pareto that comes up with lions and foxes, but yes.
So he talked about that. He rallied us not to cancel our own due to liberal standards. So this is another counter signal against Steve Dace, who would cancel people for liberal standards. Like Michael Spangler's tweets that other people may or may not have interacted with. So anyway, and then saying that we should follow the standards of Christ instead. So Aaron McIntyre doesn't say that we shouldn't cancel anyone on the right. He says that they should be canceled according to standards of Christ, not man's standards. Okay. Yeah. Jeremy confirms that it was Pareto and his, lions and foxes.
Yeah. See, I read his book. I remember.
You did the reading. He does the reading around
and
here.
Like, again, total.
He's like our Wesley Todd.
So Total State, for those that don't know, it is a good primer if you don't want to do all of the reading and you just want to get a baseline that helps you understand. Total State is actually a very good book. It kind of condenses like 10 different books into one. So it's very digestible, very easy to read. It's almost too short because I wanted it to go on another 100 pages. But yeah, if you're just looking for a good primer, it's a very good book for that.
Right. So, and he gave a very good speech. Again, I tweeted this at the time, but everyone in that room was smarter for having listened to Aaron McIntyre talk. And yeah, I took some good pictures because, again, I'm 15 yards away. There was like a unofficial assigned seating if you just marked your territory at this event. And then McIntyre is often mild-mannered with a clinical approach to theory, but he was pretty animated. He got pretty fired up in the middle towards the end of his speech. When he gets passionate about Christianity, even though, again, if you've watched his show, he's pretty mild-mannered. He's pretty clinical. He has a clinical apathy towards a lot of the subject material, but he gets pretty passionate about Christ, about Christianity. I'll read the super chat by Nobody Special. Y'all should work out a role to deal with Doug and James since y'all do most of their show prep. I don't know how true that is, but I don't want to know how true that is because the dividing line is a lot of stuff to list, a lot of crap to wade through into in order to get to the good stuff or the meaty stuff that's clippable. I don't know how one of our guys does that. But anyway, he's on it. So that's day two. And after day two, you know, I went partying with the boys. We went to a bar out in Temple, Texas, and, you know, had some fun there. Broed it up, talked with the guys, made some friends, stuff like that. Smoked some cigars. And Joel Webbin actually gave me, he gave me my first cigar. There, no homo. But anyway, so he cut my cigar and, you know, I tried it. I will say this about cigars. I don't think the cigar life is for me. There is, I just saying, like the reformed bro stereotype about mustache or beards or mustaches, if you're Andrew Isker, and then smoking cigars. Like, I don't really feel anything while smoking a cigar except really cool. But afterwards, I did feel a little sick. But yeah, there's some cigars and shuffleboard. But yeah, all I felt was super cool and then sick afterwards. So it's like, I don't know. I'm like, how much nicotine's in these things? So I know you're not supposed to, you know, you're not supposed to go from like the 6 milligrams of Zyn. If, you know, if you, you're not supposed to try the 15 milligrams of Zyn on your first try or whatever, or the knickknacks or whichever brand you use. There's like a couple different brands that are very popular right now. And by the way, when I was at the airport, there was these frat bros that were flying into Pittsburgh. They were coming to the gate. So they're going to, they got to the airport really early because they got to the gate while we were getting boarded for the next flight. So they were super early to the airport and they're popping nicotine pouches in their mouths. I'm like, these are our guys. But anyway, the West Virginia bros. So with that said, cigars, shuffleboard, I am not good at shuffleboard, but I think with time, I will become a boss at it. But anyway, fun time at the bar. And that was the end of Friday. So I didn't get back to the hotel room till like past 1 o'clock. And the funny thing is I drained my battery so much that I barely got back to the hotel. I had 2% left and I needed GPS to get there. And the GPS was not doing me right in Temple at night. So anyway, let's get to day three. And this day was basically highlighted by Stephen Wolf versus David Reese. There was a panel at the beginning. And before I talk about that, I will say Arn McIntyre left the conference after this. I didn't see him on Saturday at all. Like I said about Steve Dace, he showed up for what he was doing and then he was out. Dusty Devers couldn't make it to the conference because of an undisclosed personal reason. Personal emergency, I should say. And then Brian Salve could not make the conference, but that was already pre-announced. Right. He just had to have a kid. Like, how dare his wife give birth at all? Like, why didn't he do his family
hold it in for another 2 months?
Yeah, exactly. You know, because everyone wants to be 46 weeks pregnant or whatever. So, yeah, that's what happened there. I'm just kidding. Congratulations, Brian. You know, you deserve it. We never spoken, and because of that, we've never spoken. But I met all the Ogden bros, very chill people. I got Haunted Cosmos while I was there. That was one of the only books I bought or got at the conference, and I'll do a review on that when the time is right. So, anyway, day three. It began with a panel, and there's a lot of wisdom for the times. The beginning of the conversation was about whether Christian nationalism was dead or not, and guess who was there? The one, the only, Thomas Acord. He made a surprise appearance in his resurgence. So he was one of the people that was given like a table to sell his book at this conference. And
that one made the rounds on the internet.
How did Eric react to this?
Eric Kahn put it out, and then you had some angry, women out there that were just like, how dare you? And then I think I'm not sure if that was when Joel Berry was trying to do the, I'm going to debunk his book. And it's just because it's a book of quotes of other books or something.
Yeah, it's an anthology. Yeah. Of quotes and stuff. So it's not even, there's nothing to debunk unless you want to like go after all Aristotle. These famous Christians for what they believed about this. But anyway, he was a surprise guest on the panel. So it was a pretty packed panel. There was like 7 or 8 guys on there. And he was a surprise guest because, you know, Joel Webbin has a flair for the dramatics. And he knows how to, you know, he knows, I don't want to say he knows how to be an entertainer, because I'll talk about the worship service afterwards. So we'll get to that as well, because I think that's a fair way to conclude the discussion of this, is the worship service that was on Sunday, but we're on Saturday right now. And Thomas Acor, just to give some background, he was canceled because he had some burner accounts that said some really hilarious things, and he just wasn't honest about it at the time. And he should have been more honest about it. I think that was sinful. But what he said was hilarious, and we should not just cancel people for comedy.
He's also made fun of mental health, and that's needed.
Yeah. So I really liked, I appreciate the guy, you know, and I appreciate the jokes from back in the day, because that stuff was hilarious. And, you know, I won't repeat it, but you can go look up what he said in his burner account that got people so mad. Thomas Acord, during this, made a great emphasis on the Great Commission's call to baptize and disciple nations, means that Christian nationalism will never die as a concept. What's interesting about this was he invoked John Piper. And John Piper's an anti-Christian nationalist because he's an Anabaptist. He's not really a Baptist. He's only Calvinistic because the whole Young, Restless, and Reform movement is about Anabaptist discovering Calvinism. That's really what the YRR is. John Piper is a part of that, maybe the granddaddy of it in some ways. It's interesting that you're making a case or an argument for Christian nationalism using John Piper. And that to me is funny. And then I also want to talk about some advice that Eddie Robles gave. Eddie Robles also highlighted that dead things are ignored and not continuously derided as dead. So if Christian nationalism was actually dead, they would just not talk about it. Instead, they're talking about it because it's not dead, but they're trying to project its own death onto it.
Well, it's, you know, it's the idea. It's kind of like the concept of living in someone's head rent free, or even the idea that we attribute quotes to people that they didn't actually say, that person is so magnanimous in history that they get quotes credited to them even though they didn't actually say them.
Oh, I thought we were going to talk about getting credited for tweets that you didn't actually make.
Oh,
but anyway,
well, we could go there.
Good. Eddie Robles also highlighted some good wisdom, and this was very impactful and good advice for anyone on the right. And I wanted to share this. He talked about Christians should not expect pastors to be more based than they are, but they should look for pastors who are loyal to their parishioners, who will have their back. This was great advice, and it's advice that I follow in my daily life. It's advice that, you know, because I'll just say this about my pastor. He's not as right-wing as me, and the elders aren't as right-wing as me, and that's fine. Find a church that will have your back, that won't cancel you. Find a church with a community that you can really be a part of. You don't have to find the perfect pastor who's right-wing in all the ways that you are. Those pastors do exist, so if you can find that, good on you. Good on you. But it might be a far drive. You know, because there are people that have done that. Like, there's that one lady who is like something of a social media influencer herself, but, you know, like all female trad wife influencers are just drama queens. And she had a cup of coffee in Joel Webbin's church and is now, and by that, I mean, like, she lived in Texas for like 6 months and maybe visited four times in 6 months. So, you know, and now she's converting to Catholicism so she can just be a Catholic and probably not take that faith seriously anyway. So that's my thoughts on that. So you have some people. So don't be like her is what I'm saying. Don't be like her. Find a church that you can be a part of, and the pastor doesn't have to be as based as you are, but find someone that's loyal. And because loyalty is a virtue these days. Loyalty is, you know, it's what Trump looks for.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason the guy that gets shot in the head is looking for people to be loyal around him. I mean, you don't want to be Caesar getting, you know, 22 stab wounds.
23, I think.
23.
Very superficial stab wounds, which makes you die slower if you think about it. So that was very good advice. I wanted to highlight that. Stephen Wolf then gave a riveting lecture on the Christian Prince. He was part of why this was riveting is because it was a short speech. Like, he maybe only took half an hour when he had an hour slot. He highlighted the historic usage of the term Christian Prince, which I'm sure you know all about. Wolf discussed how conservatives like personified power that can be seen in a representative, and liberals prefer implied and untraceable power, embodied by the question, who was actually running the Biden administration? So remember, everyone was like, who's running the Biden administration? Well, this is how liberals operate, and is more implied, hidden behind the curtain type of power. That's what liberals prefer. Conservatives prefer the king. Conservatives prefer the strong man. We prefer to actually know who's in charge, but that's a, and he highlighted that as a difference between conservatives and liberals. And he highlighted that the Christian Prince is a great man. And he said, not all of us will be great men. Not all of us will even be among the few, great of the few, or something like that. So there's great men. And he talked about, I'll use Robert E. Lee as one of the examples of a great man that he said. And then he talked about how the people around him, like Stonewall Jackson, were among the few. There's the great, then there's a few. But then he also talked about that all of us can be great, or called to greatness in our own capacities, in our own ways, and the areas in our lives that we can control. We're called to be great fathers. We're called to be great pastors, some of us. We're called to be great churchmen. We're called to be great men of character, and maybe not renown, but certainly character. So it was a very good speech. This was one of the most academic of the speeches. And then David Reese talked.
I mean, there is a lot to be said about the concept of conservatism, true conservatism, you know, knowing who's in charge, knowing who you can go to. Because at the end of the day, you know, what the reason monarchy is a better system than democracy is because it's easier to pressure the king than it is to pressure your representatives in Congress to do what you want. Because all you have to do is apply pressure to one person versus applying pressure to a majority of 500. So that's why it's fundamentally better to have a monarchy than a democracy.
Okay. Yes, I would agree. And there's also the concept of subsidiarity, which democracy doesn't really allow nearly as much, because one king can't exercise that much power. They need to have some sense.
Yes, they need. There's always going to be some form of oligarchy of, you know, the king has to have nobles. His power is not absolute, regardless of what, you know.
High crown authority in CK3, man.
Like, yeah, okay, Bloody Mary did her thing. Well, yeah, but she couldn't sustain. That's not a sustainable course. So, and yes, people might suffer.
He talked about that, about strong power not being able to last very long.
Which is why it's important to understand political theory before, you know, when having these conversations. That strong power, yeah, it's not a sustainable course. You can't be Emperor Nero or Domitian demanding everyone pay the tax and have the mark. You can't do that forever. Diocletian.
Yeah.
Because again, the fact that you have to do that shows that your power is actually weak. It's kind of a paradox.
So David Reese was afterwards, and he was the only one who used slides, by the way. He gave a mini sermon on the parable in Judges 9, where the productive trees refused to rule, and so the bramble bush ruled instead. Reese urged Christians to seek and accept power and its accompanying responsibility. And when I tweeted about this, that's what I wanted to focus on, because, you know, I thought that part was very profound. He also did like a sort of a sales pitch on theonomy, which I there's some things that he said that I don't agree with. Like, Genesis 9 is not the beginning of human governance. It's not the beginning of the civil magistrate. I think
that's a dispensational
argument. Yes.
Because it's hard to say that there wasn't at the very minimum patriarchal rule before and after the flood, because I imagine Noah was functionally a king, or at the very least, he was like the king of kings. So long as he was alive, like he was untouchable. He was like a made man.
I don't know, because he was alive while he died during the life of Isaac.
I understand that, but like no one was, I imagine he wasn't subject to anyone.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So even though he might have been like in his remote area, like no one was going to like mess with him.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But with that said, he talked about the bramble bush being maybe not useless, but it was a function of judgment, because this is in the story of Judges, you have Abimelech who makes himself king. So there actually were kings during the time of Judges. It just wasn't very good. Or some of the judges ruled as kings, like Gideon was functionally a king while he was alive. And he had many sons and many wives. Like the dude had, he spread his seed. And then Abimelech comes and kills all but one of his sons and makes himself king. And this is where the surviving son of Abimelech gives this parable. And that's the context that these worthless men put Abimelech in charge. And, that point that David Reese brings up did not make sense. Do not agree with it. Like you said, and I was going to say, it's a dispensationalist read of the text to say that human government did not exist prior to the fall or prior to the flood. Because I don't want to overstate the fractions here, but isn't like half or maybe a third of human history is pre-flood?
I mean, I think it's 1500 years, give or take. But I mean, again, when you talk about the sheer volume of people that could have existed then, the fact that the world was a very violent place, so that probably would imply a very tribal,
I think the very
warlord-like environment.
They made the pyramids and other monolithic structures.
Well, give or take. Well, yeah, I mean, that's part of the argument. If those are
pyramids being flood, pre-flood. But
yeah, those are pre-lapsarian, then. Yeah,
pre-deluge is the word, right?
Pre-deluge. Lapsarian is flood.
Stephen Wolf makes the argument that human government would have existed in a pre-lapsarian world.
And again,
world.
It would be because the fifth commandment is in the heart, so the fifth commandment is from which Romans 13 comes from. It's also the same commandment that Ephesians 5:23 comes from, 1 Peter 3 comes from, like all that is enjoined into the fifth commandment, as because that's all that embodies all human authority.
So let's see. Oh, so you were okay. So you were also there at IHOP, yeah. Okay, so then they had a debate, and I thought the debate went really well. It was a very cordial debate. Do you have any other notes on this part? So, yeah, the debate was pretty interesting. David Reese, so they debated the role of government to police. Let's talk about the first half of the debate. Half of the debate focused on the epistemological claims, and the other half focused on the practical role of government. The epistemological claims made by both Reese and Wolf were compelling. So it's like, oh, I agree when Reese speaks. And then when Wolf speaks, it's like, oh, I agree. And that's kind of how that part of the debate went.
So this part a lot of agreement. There wasn't necessarily difference in terms of how they read the text. It's just,
well, it's not even that. It's like both of what they say is kind of true, and they certainly present it in a true way. But here's the thing. I don't think the epistemology matters. I really don't. Because in political science, like, what happens when the rubber meets the road? You know, you might have all your dots, dotted I's and crossed T's, but if the system doesn't hold up, when it actually is time for practical application, it doesn't matter. So they debated the role of the government to police roads and regulate land and perform building inspections. To much applause, Reese criticized American bureaucracy's inability to have dominion over land, highlighting the government's ownership of Arizona land, which inflates real estate prices and prevents development. He made a comment about deserts being a curse, and how, you know, de-desertifying and, you know, terraforming land, desert land is a good thing and a blessing from God. Stephen Wolf countered and pointed out that American bureaucracy is notoriously bad, but this is not how other nations view or experience bureaucracy. I don't know if you have a comment on that.
Yeah, I mean, because Wolf caught some flack from a bunch of, let's just be honest, retarded people that can't understand, you know, history, science, and they can't think out, they can't think outside of categories. And the idea of any form of collectivization is seen as communism to a lot of these people. Because he made the comment about universal healthcare, and that universal healthcare, you know, if a country wanted to do universal healthcare, and, you know, then that's within their right. But, you know, he's not actually saying that every country should have universal health care. He's saying if you're, and if it works for your,
say America shouldn't.
Yes. But people don't understand how, like, the idea that, oh, I don't know. It's a very,
hypotheticals they have a, work.
Well, they have a very libertarian or idea when it comes to just anything. I mean, the same argument for whether health care is, should be universal is the same argument for whether universal or schooling should be universalized as well. As well, where, you know, at one point, yeah, there was, you know, the idea of having everyone go to school was actually a very good idea. The problem then becomes, okay, the schools were corrupted over time because of poor maintenance. And, you know, obviously there are other alternatives which have arisen, like homeschooling.
Yeah, but we still, by definition, have universal schooling in the United States, because I believe universal health care means that everyone has health care.
Yeah, I mean, again, I mean, the biggest...
What a lot of people think is single payer, which means that the government pays for everyone's health insurance.
But there seems to be, like, this idea that even the idea of, like, whether there's socialized health care or even socialized social security, like retirement, are theological debates when in reality they're not. They're political debates. They're purely in the realm of political. It goes back to the whole climate change is not a biblical debate so much as it is a scientific debate. The merits of the claims are strictly scientific.
I mean, I might
scientific.
Think it's a biblical debate because I believe it's a liberal eschatology.
Well, I understand that
part. I'm going in a different direction than most people do.
But I mean, when you're talking about the claims that the greenhouse gases warming the earth, that's strictly a scientific claim.
Yeah. I mean, you know, let's avoid getting that YouTube disclaimer at the top on climate change. But anyway, because I can go off about, and I probably have when I discuss things like Gavin Ortland being a, you know, Green New Deal supporter or whatever.
Like, you can argue against the policy of something just by the merits of whether it would be effective or not effective. Yeah. It doesn't have to turn into a theological debate.
Right. And
I mean, and that's pretty much Stephen Wolf's, you know, an extension of Stephen Wolf's claim that American bureaucracy is uniquely bad. Doesn't mean that everyone in the world has bad bureaucracy. In fact, if you read the Bible, Nebuchadnezzar had great bureaucracy.
Yeah.
And he's actually known in history of having good systems.
So David Reese, using theonomy, argues that the government does not have the right to hold public land, and that the government's role in policing roads stems from their ownership of them, and traffic laws were akin to trespassing. Now, this was kind of like a weird argument. It kind of seemed like a contradiction to say that the government owns the roads so they can police them how they see fit because of trespassing, which, by the way, I don't recall a Bible verse against trespassing.
Well, I mean, the problem
is, but I also think it's a cell phone when you're arguing that the government shouldn't have ownership of land and then say that the government owns the roads, so therefore...
Yeah, but the problem is you're separating the government from the people. So you're saying the government owns the road when in reality it's the people that own the road.
Yes, I think that's a good point. And yeah, when I've talked online about this issue before, it's like, I think public land's a good thing because hunting is good. But preserving game so that people can hunt is also good. So government land, I think, has, you know, national parks is good. I think it's good not to just use up all our land resources without planning for the future and, you know, incremental.
Yeah, conservation is a conservative value.
Conservation, yeah. So there's nothing wrong with that, but some people would privatize all the land, and yeah, guess what? You're just going to end up with a lot of black rocks.
Or if you don't have privatized land, you have tragedy of the commons, which, if you don't know what that is,
just read the Lorax.
Yes, the Lorax.
Well,
So if no one owns the land, then that means people will just abuse the land.
Right. This was also, so David Reese also applied this logic to littering, which again, there's no Bible verse on littering either. I don't see how littering and trespassing, you extrapolate one into the other. Wolf asserted that littering was a crime against the eyes of people. Like, we have to look at that trash. And that's like, he said, you know, that's a crime, basically. I thought that was a pretty fun argument. And then Wolf asserted that, here's one crux of the debate. Wolf asserted that the government, the civil magistrate, had the power to create malum prohibitum laws, which means that these, so there's malum per se, right? Malum se, or so things that are wrong in and of themselves. And then there's things that are wrong because they're against the rules. So that's malum prohibitum. Wolf believes that you can, that the civil magistrate can create malum prohibitum laws. David Reese does not. He believes that the legal system needs to react to offenses rather than train and coach behavior in any capacity other than malum se. So Wolf believes that things like large lakes could not simply be regulated, could not simply be regulated via property rights and were common property. So property rights were not sufficient to regulate things like lakes or, you know, a lot of other things like, but lakes were probably the primary example.
And just to add on to that, that deals with the economics, the concept of externality. So it's the idea of the second and third order effects of an individual action. So the government or, you know, the public or the, you know, the collective is able to basically operate and regulate in a manner that controls for second and third order effects. So there's externalities. So, and basically, you know, the idea of property rights doesn't necessarily guarantee that.
So, yeah, I took business law in high school, which is actually harder than business law in college. Fun fact. And you learn more. But anyway, Wolf asserted that California has the right to ensure that a parking garage can withstand a 7.0 earthquake, whereas David Reese believes that the law should be merely punitive. So if the parking garage collapses, you punish the person who built it or the property owner.
Which I'm very shocked that that's his argument, because that's not a very convincing argument in regards to trying to convince people to be the honest.
Because if anything, because usually oh, there's so many instructions on how to build the temple.
Because normally,
or building laws,
or even the whole ledge thing, where you shall have a ledge on your roof to prevent someone from falling over. So you would say that would at least be a standard from which you can derive building codes.
Okay. Yeah, that's actually, yeah, you got to jump through the hoops of extrapolating that.
So I mean, it's
to get to this, but yes. And because here's the thing, this is where natural law sort of has an advantage is, yes, we know these things. We can understand these things. And the Bible is just reinforcing common sense. Like, it's not like people did not know. So when Cain killed Abel, it's not like God had given the command that murder was sinful, but it was obvious that it was sinful. So anyway, and that's kind of like the thing about theonomy is that it treats nothing was wrong until God said it was wrong explicitly in divine revelation. I'm not really convinced that that's the case. And I kind of said that who people thought won this debate was directly correlated to their views on public land, but the two sides had much to agree with. A factor that should not be overlooked. So there's a lot of agreement between
them. Yeah, because it sounds like you're saying they had a lot of agreements on epistemology. Just, you know, it's just when it gets down to the meat and, you know, the nitty gritty, that's where the disagreements go. And it's more technicality, which, again, I mean, if you're looking at a system that better explains the world, I mean, I think Wolf, it sounds like Wolf probably had that, especially when you start using the Latin phrases, because, you know, the Romans had a lot of systems in place. You know, the Romans had standard designs for, you know, military camps, you know, even their hospitals or infirmaries had a standard design. So, you know, is this from some divine law or is this simply from, you know, best practices?
Yeah, I want to highlight this one as well. Bishop of the Railway for $5 Canadian or pesos. I don't know how much that's worth anymore with all the trade wars going on. I hear that the Vietnamese dong is no longer strong. It says at its weakest point against the dollar. Anyway, I'm sure you can make a joke about that. But the Canadian dollar. All right. Reese's anti-monarchy slant in his Armored Republic ads are cringe. Yeah, because he owns Armored Republic because that's one of the companies that's owned by Reese, the Reese Fund, which, again, David Reese is good, is very valuable on our side. I think he's a brother. I think he's wrong about a lot of things, right about a lot of things. But he's pretty useful on our side. Just saying, he's a weapon. But I agree that you can't really use the Bible to oppose monarchy as a system of government. I think that's kind of impossible.
Or authoritarianism in general.
Yeah, and that's not to say totalitarianism. Authoritarian, you know, just means that you have a figure, you have a government that exerts authority. You know, parents should be at least a little bit authoritarian towards their kids. Not totalitarian, not tyrannical, but, you know,
Yeah, I mean, again, you'll tell your children it's a dictatorship. You might use the word benevolent in front of that. But
The benevolent dictatorship is probably the most ideal form of government ever made. Anyway, but I think that might have come up a little bit during the debate. But that was the debate. I think that's a pretty fair summary of the debate. But I didn't give too many of my personal thoughts. Oh, I did in this, but when I wrote the article on this, which I kind of read a little bit, I didn't give my personal thoughts in the article because, you know, again, I'm trying to be fair. I'm trying to promote the event because this was a very cordial debate. These two people are friends, even though they disagree on stuff. And people were hungry for these type of ideas to be hashed out. Why people in other reformed camps don't want to hash out ideas, don't want to get on a stage with somebody, I don't know, because people want that. People want the unity. People want the unity as well as the debating of ideas.
The worst thing the whole right wing can do is purity spiral. Like, I mean, there's a lot of talk going on and maybe sentiments about, you know, are we going too far, blah, blah, blah. No, the worst thing we can do right now is purity spiral.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it, because we don't need to cancel David Reese because he has some cringe ideas. And, you know, Stephen Wolf, I think he's a thought leader, but he's definitely not everyone. He's a thought leader that's so thoughtful that he's not everyone's cup of tea, because he's a very thoughtful individual. And he's also, you know, one of those moderate centrists. That's another running joke at the conference, was that we're all just moderate centrists here. And, you know, we're not crazy. We're just moderate centrists. Which I want to say CJ Engel started that, but that he started that joke online, but that was a running joke at the conference. Let's see. I'm trying to see. We got some comments to catch up on. If you see any questions, we can dive into that. But what happened after that? Oh, afterwards. I hung out with the bros and we went to Texas Roadhouse in Texas. So if you know, that's kind of like, that to me is a little ironic, because I actually have a Texas Roadhouse, like very close to where I live. So it's a special occasion because that restaurant's always packed. But anyway, going to Texas Roadhouse in Texas, pretty fun time. And I got to do a lot of yee-hawing and stuff.
All right, so we got some questions. So this one's a super chat by Nobody Special, $5. Are we allowed to say white boy summer, or is that co-opted now by wackos? I would say we should continue saying it.
Yeah, I know.
I don't even think it's been co-opted by wackos, unless you want to just say all the weird nods online are wackos. But
I like the Holden brothers.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned,
William Swallows, I like him too.
I mean, it goes beyond them. But as far as I'm concerned, that's actually a positive means of co-opting something. Because when I first heard the term, I probably was a little put off by it myself, simply because it seemed very fratty. But at the same time, fraternal.
Same. But let me just say, white man. Yeah, I'm not Spider Boy. I'm Spider Man. Which, I don't know how Marvel missed that joke. Maybe they had it, but yeah. I feel like, yeah, you got to make those types of jokes. Tom Holland. Anyway.
Yeah, but trying to think. So yeah, I think it's an excellent example of something that's been co-opted. Again, having fun, being the Jolly Warriors is actually a very positive element for any movement. We're not just, and the idea of us being characterized as disaffected, because yeah, a lot of us might be disaffected with, you know, DEI and all kinds of stuff, the economy, the housing crisis, all these other issues. But the idea that we are having fun in the meantime is actually a very positive sign. And again, there does need to be at least some earthly optimism to help get you through the day. While, again, obviously the Lord is where you get your eternal optimism from.
Right. And along those lines, you said about, so Eric Kahn talked about defeating the Longhouse, and White Boy Summers is part of how we defeat the Longhouse. So I believe that is a useful term moving forward, and I'll be more of a participant. I remember last summer I went to Bucky's for the first time. That was my White Boy Summer pilgrimage. And, you know, we got an image next to the Beaver while in Temple, Texas, because they had a Bucky's right next to the convention center. Like, you turn right and there it is, right down the street. So what are the odds? I mean, maybe in Texas they're higher because, you know, Bucky's is from Texas, but, you know, there's only one Bucky's in Missouri that I know of, and it's in Springfield. And you had to drive 400 miles to get to it. And you see the signs.
All right. So here's the next one. It kind of coincides with something I had. Because you did say you met Chocolate Knox.
Chocolate Knox was there.
But obviously, he's probably the only one from Moscow I've heard that was there.
And he's on David Reese's level in a lot of ways. So, you know, they're both very, you know, very... I don't want to say cage stage reform bros, but yeah. Fun time at the IHOP is what we had. So, yeah.
But I guess this question, what was the consensus on Moscow?
Okay.
And that more refers to the sentiment of the crowd.
Okay. Good question.
Because, again, question. You know, was anyone talking about Doug?
What I hear is that a lot of people in Doug Wilson's church watch the people that were on stage. They're into the Ogden Bros or into Joel Webbin is what I hear. So Doug Wilson, I don't think he's winning the fight, but at the same time, if he's going to have a fight, I don't think he's going to win because be a little bit more clear. I don't think Doug Wilson's going to strong arm his congregation to not listen to certain people. I don't think he's going to do that. He does kind of do it on the internet, but
that on the web, not on the pulpit.
What I hear is that he's a grandfatherly figure. He's not like your professor that's going to fail you and give you bad grades.
And again, that's his personal demeanor.
I want to put a pause on the, questions, although I see some questions. Actually, I'll answer this because it's related to that. Did Chocolate Knox avoid signing the required Antioch Declaration? Again, his signature's not on it, neither is Joe Rigney's, who's coming out with a big book, or who came out with a big book about the the sin of empathy. We did the live stream, The Sin of Toxic Empathy, so, you know, I mixed those two. And still a little mixed into my head. So let's talk about the worship on Sunday morning. And all these days, I did not sleep very well at the hotel because it got cold. It got cold in Texas. I left Maryland. It was bad. I was thinking I'm leaving Maryland and the weather is going to be much nicer in Texas. But it got colder in Maryland than it was in Texas where I was. And I had to run heat in my hotel room and it still was not warm enough. Man. I'm not used to sleeping in bed alone, and I get cold sometimes.
I'm just shocked the running heat part.
Well, the window had a hole in it. Did I mention that part? And then there's the thing at the bottom, the fan that's connected. I don't think that was preventing any air from the outside from coming in, and it was dipping into the 30s. So it got cold.
I didn't run heat. It was like 6 or 7 degrees. It was the day before. Like, it was around the time of Trump's inauguration.
You don't ever run heat, so you're Scrooge. So, yeah. So anyway, I was able to get up pretty well, and that and the Texas food kind of goes through me in certain ways, and that's basically a biological alarm clock. Anyway, barely had enough toilet paper to survive in that hotel room. So with that, every last square used. So with that said, went to church on, I got to church like 45 minutes early because I got up early, as I mentioned, for reasons that I mentioned, and I was just able to get out of the hotel room. I left my lint roller, but I didn't even use it, but I took it out and just didn't put it back. Only thing I left in the hotel room.
It'll still be there for the next guest.
I didn't steal the batteries, and instead I left the lint roller. I'm such a good citizen. So I get there an hour early, or almost an hour early, and, you know, just meet some people, and then we worship. In the liturgy at Joel Webbin's church is very interesting. This guy plays hard. He is a bro, but he worships hard too. Like, it was a very serious liturgy. They were very serious about worshiping. They don't do the songs first like I'm used to. They do the songs close to the end.
So what is it? Opening announcements, like prayer?
They do announcements at the beginning or very end. So he says he doesn't want to interrupt the worship with the announcements. So anyway, they do like a confession of sins and then sort of a reading of 1 John 1:8, right? About if you, or is it 1:9? If you confess your sins.
So they do a confession and
forgive. Yes.
So, yes. I know that.
So Jeremy that in the comment section points out that it was similar to a Presby church.
Yes.
And someone criticized it for being Anglican. And it's like, I like Anglicanism. I like Anglicans.
I can literally, like, no. Does he do a catechism or something? A catechism?
He doesn't do a catechism. He didn't do a catechism
some
question.
Some form of liturgy.
But there's a reading of the law, and the Ten Commandments were read.
So an Old and New Testament reading?
I don't know about a New Testament reading. The sermon was in Matthew, which is funny because my church is in the middle of Matthew, so it's like I can't get away from Matthew. No, I'm just kidding. Not that I would want to, but yeah, and then they did songs in communion at the very end. And I gotta say, that was like the best communion bread and some of the best communion wine that I've ever had.
Better in Texas, right?
And I guess. So yeah, they were serious. We sang the Psalms and we sang some hymns. The Mighty Fortress Is Our God was one of those hymns, by the way. Very expected. I'm unsurprised by that fact. And then we just stuck around a little bit afterwards, and then we just had to get on out of, or, you know, get on out of there. So people underestimate how serious the liturgy is at Joel Webbin's church, but they take it seriously, and I appreciate that. It was reverent. The sermon was pretty good. He relied a lot on Matthew Henry's commentary on Matthew 8, specifically the demons who were possessing descendants of the Girgashites. And Joel Webbin highlighted how Satan's power is being removed. And talked about how Christ was fighting and going out and sallying into the territory of Baal and Astra and just destroying them. So it was great. It was a good sermon. And I don't think there's any clips that will surface from the sermon, but it was pretty good. Actually, there might be one clip where he does a reference to the names of the demons being Eli and Phil, but you know, if you know, you know. So, all right. That's basically all. I'll take some questions on this.
Yeah, I'm kind of impressed.
I like this. Did a Creed as well. They did a song by Creed. No, we did not sing Higher. Although someone sang 6 Feet Under at the doing karaoke at the bar that we went to. But it's a good – that song's a banger. I don't want to hear it. So, yeah, I'll do some questions. See if I have any memes for review. And –
yeah, I'm kind of impressed at how liturgical. And again, a lot of churches should do a confession of sin in their worship service, considering, you know, the idea that we, you know, it allows us to actually treat sin seriously when we preach, when we confess, do a prayer of confession every Sunday.
You know, it's funny. In my picture with Joel Webbin, someone said that it looked like Dwight and Moe's from The Office. And I just laughed, like they might be making fun of me, but I retweeted that anyway because that's hilarious. I'll take that.
It's a roast. Take it.
that's funny. I can't help but laugh at that. I do have some memes in the meantime, so you get some questions in and let's do some meme review. Some of these are conference related. Here we go. Corporate needs you to find the difference between this picture and this picture, and I guess it's a. I don't know who that is.
Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings, maybe? It looks a little animated, so it's hard to tell. And it's Eric Kahn, and they're the same picture. Again, might be making fun of the guy, but can't tell. Then we got Who is James Lindsay by Tucker Carlson. That's a meme template. That's a meme template more than it is a meme itself. But
now, was the Tucker Carlson interview talked about at all?
Yes, because Andrew Isker gave the first speech. Mm-hmm. So people are like, oh, did you see him on there? People are asking me that. And people who are subscribers to me are asking me that, but maybe they were traveling because I certainly was traveling when I published that video because I recorded the night before. So in lieu of doing a Tuesday night recording, we're doing a live stream. So then we got the anti-Semitic baby.
Yes. Cause that one that took off maybe not while you're traveling, but probably
March.
Well, no, because of the clip with, that, you know, Matt Walsh. Okay. Oh, so that meme is older than that. Okay.
Yeah. So we got, oh, look, here comes the far right, but it's about Starship Troopers.
Yeah, because people are trying to argue that, oh, the bugs are the good guys. Humanity's the bad guys.
Yeah, I mean, this debate happens every spring.
Yeah, it always comes up.
Every spring.
Oh, you're media illiterate. It's like, no.
No, because the physiognomy in that movie says that the good guys are humans and the bugs are evil and you have no sympathy for them in the movie if you watch it. Let's see, I'm gonna skip that one. Smartest Bill Burr fan and the dumbest Norman McDonald enjoyer. And so the Bill Burr fan is a small brain while the Norm McDonald enjoyer is a big brain, even if he's the dumbest. I like that because Bill Burr is the longhouse that we oppose. He is a longhoused individual. He made a movie on Netflix. Which movie was that? Was that the old dad's movie?
Old dads or something. Keep in mind, yeah, I mean,
that is about movie about him taking on the longhouse and losing. You lose in your own movie.
I mean, keep in mind, he went from like being like edgy atheist comedy, and then you know now he married a woman. His child may or may not even be his.
Wow.
Not praising Corey Mahler, but a lot of Corey Mahler's tweets are validated by the example of Bill Burr.
Then there's this. I've been saving these for a long time, like the JD Vance
head memes.
Yeah, like
I mean, it's a little late.
It is a little late. We haven't done a meme review in over a month. Okay, then we got one courtesy of Andrew Tate. It is Ron DeSantis kneeling as Derek Chauvin on Andrew Tate, who's George Floyd in this meme. Not gonna lie, like that makes Ron DeSantis seem pretty cool.
Might say Cobra Tate.
I mean, hey, Andrew Tate did a good meme here. I can't lie. Or maybe he took a good meme from someone else. And we got another meme. It's a Gavin Ortland meme. Retarded quotes from Dad. Never Trump. Sometimes Harris. Sometimes Harris, always Jesus, is on the other side of the cover. And looks like he's reading and enjoying that book.
But he's not liberal.
And then we got Joel Berry, everyone and everyone else, as the Trump, J.D. Vance, and Zelensky meme. We got friends, Seinfeld, Always Sunny. I don't know if we've already done these. Have we? I don't know. Yeah, we did some of these. Okay, so we're down. I know we did not.
We are caught up.
We didn't do the George Floyd meme. So that one.
Which is also timely because.
That one needed to get shown. All right, we got some questions in the queue. Because it's always good to do some meme review. I had some Joel responded to that tweet with it's true gif. Yes. Because, man, we can take jokes about ourselves.
That's Gimli. What's wrong with you? We got told on the...
I'm not a Lord of the Rings person, okay?
I haven't seen the movies in
10 years it's been since I've seen the movies. And then before those 10 years, I didn't watch any of the movies. So give me a little slack here because I'm not autistic about Lord of the Rings. Also, John Harris, he said, if you know more about Lord of the Rings or some fantasy world than you know about the history of your own country, shame on you. He might not have said the shame on you part, but it was implied.
Also, don't
you know every SpongeBob episode, but you don't know the main character of Lord of the Rings. Probably at this point in time, there's more SpongeBob episodes I've not seen than I have seen because, you know, it's the old first three seasons of SpongeBob that are, you know, really goated. And the movies are pretty good. Plankton movie was actually pretty good. That's on Netflix. And then.
So we have any, I mean, again, there was a singles event.
I don't know obviously anyone who went to that. I didn't meet anyone that went to that, so it's hard to say. I don't know how awkward it was. It wasn't. There were maybe some people that might have been pearl clutchers there at the event, which is pretty odd, but I don't know if that was a whole lot, just going off of what I've heard or not heard. But this conference was for the bros, which is very easy for me to say as a happily married, loyal man.
Yeah, you went to the bar with the men, not the women.
Exactly. And I didn't hit on anyone at the bar either.
And there's no hotel room worthy to...
I did not see any... one of the slangs they use? Yeah, I didn't see any hotel hoes. Didn't see any of that. Let's see.
Do you have a super chat?
Mm-hmm. Oh. It was great to meet you. You're a chill bro, and I carried you on the shuffleboard. Glad we're friends. Okay, I had my moments, but I am just inconsistent. Let's see. Has Joel largely overcome the micro controversy of his ministerial problems of 10 years ago? Was it discussed at all? It was a little. It was made. There were a lot of references to it made by Joel. And he also said during the Sunday service, he said something along the lines of his friend, and he named his friend, I won't name his friend, has all the dirt on him. If Eli wanted to know worse things about Joel Webbin, he should get it out of him. But you know, that guy's not gonna betray his trust to Joel Webbin. So the controversy was discussed in passing, but it wasn't like there wasn't a sit down conversation about it. You know, he didn't like defend himself about it, and he didn't want to
make the conference about that.
Yeah. He didn't want to take any time to really address it because first of all, this is a sin that's already been adjudicated. And I have criticisms about how the church adjudicated it whether it was a church or not, how his overseers adjudicated that at the time might not have been right, but he still obeyed them. And you can't just come after him 10 years later for obeying the instruction that was given to him, even if the instruction was wrong. So,
I mean, again, since the question's asking more broadly, I would say that the controversy has more or less subsided, and you know, they're forced to move on to something else. And
they're going to want to hang him with it for a long time, but you know, just vibe with the boys and just don't give in is kind of like my reaction to that, because being disqualified 10 years ago does not make him disqualified now. And I don't agree with the term permanently disqualifying in general. Like, I think the things that are permanently disqualifying are also crimes that you won't be able to get requalified for, because you'll be either headless or in jail for, you know, a long time. So my thoughts on that, like, Robert Morris should have been prosecuted at the time, so he wouldn't have been restored, is my view on that. So I agree with that law that Brad Little signed in Idaho the other day on firing squad for certain people. So, all right. Yeah, I saw a number of guy-girl pairings with red lanyards as the weekend went on. Okay, so Statistics Man saw some stats. All righty. Again, I don't know. They weren't exact about giving out the lanyards. I know they gave me a black lanyard. I don't know if they saw my symbol of loyalty, but it is what it is. Did you get a lot of interviews or guest opportunities with the speakers or good business deals? I think we'll get some interviews out of this. I got Thursday interview with Wesley Todd is confirmed. I'll make the live stream on Wednesday night. So that interview was also planned before the conference, though. So I can't quite take credit for that. I will say this. The only person I didn't get to speak to CJ Angle, but I also missed the opportunity to speak to JD Hall. I wasn't able to talk to him. So I talked to everyone. I had conversations with most of the other speakers, but I missed out on JD Hall. I maybe saw him once or twice, but he eluded me. Or someone else like Joel Webben. I think the first time I saw him, Joel Webben got to me first. So, and then introduced me to the life of cigars. Anyway, and I think the business deals might come as far as the other part of that question. But it's all about forming relationships. So, any other questions? I think we can wrap up. Thank you all. You are a great crowd tonight. If you like Evangelical Dark Web, do also subscribe to the channel if you are new. That's what helps with those magical YouTube algorithms. And we have a Patreon-like system that you can support us at evangelicaldarkweb.org/join. Have a book, Winning Not Win, Some 10 Commandments of Spiritual Warfare. And that's about it. Stay based, Christ is King, and we will catch you on the next one.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.